Hello, and welcome to my Teaching Autism and Special Education Community Podcast. My name's Nikki, and I'm so excited to have you listening and following along my podcast journey. Today, I'm discussing all things transition and the ways that we can help and support our children. First, I'm going to explain a little bit about transition and why this may cause our children difficulties. I'm going to need you to all use your imagination here and play along with me. What is your favourite thing to do in the world? Like the whole world. It can be something small, like a hot bubble bath, or it could be surfing out on the waves in Hawaii. Now, imagine you've been told you can do that today. You get started and you're having such a lovely time that you don't even realise how much time has passed. You can hear someone calling you, but you're too relaxed in your bath or you're too far out to sea. Something about 5 minutes. What's that? Next thing, the plug is pulled on your bath and you're being pulled out. Or you surf down to the beach and someone comes and takes your surfboard away. What do you do? You're not going to be happy. You were having such a lovely time and now it's all been taken away from you. But before you can argue, you're being ushered somewhere else. You have to get changed. And now we're going to go and do circuits inside? What? How did that happen? I was just out there having fun and now I'm here. Now, imagine you can't communicate any of that with the person that you're with. It's hard, right? So what's the best way to let everyone know you're not happy right now? Probably to shout, scream, cry, drop to the floor in defeat, try and run back to your bubble bath or to the beach. But someone's telling you, you have to do this. You have to work. And then there's no more bubble bath. There's no more surfing. Can you feel the anxiety inside you already? There's no more bubble bath, there's no more surfing, then why should I work if I don't get what I want? And that's it. You're lost. You have no reason to want to do this. You have no reason to want to cooperate. You want to be back doing what you love. Now, let's rewind back to the beginning. You're lying in your bubble bath or you're out on your surfboard. Someone comes up next to you. They have a picture of work and a sand timer. The sand timer is how long you have left surfing or in your bath. You can watch the sand going down. You can prepare yourself that your lovely bath or your surfing session is coming to an end. You know once this is over, you have to go and work. This is better, but one thing, how long am I going to be working for? Or what am I working on? Or what do I get after work? So although this is one step better, we're not quite there yet. Now, rewind again back to when someone brought you a picture and a sand timer. This time it says painting and you have the sand timer. Okay, so now you know what you're going to be doing. You can see how much longer is left of this activity. But can you come back here after it? What happens after work? How long are you working for? Rewind once more. Last time, I promise. Someone comes up to you. They have a board and all they say is first surfing, then painting, and they show you a sand timer. Okay, I get to surf now and then I have to go and paint. I can watch that sand timer go down. I can visually see how long I have left of this activity. When the sand timer finishes, the person comes back. First painting, then surfing. Oh, I can surf again? Well, that's exciting. Or they can give you a board of different pictures, what we fondly call a choice board. And you can choose what you want to do after you've finished painting. Well, now I don't mind because I get to pick something I want to do. I get to have a little bit of control over my future. Sure, I don't get to control the work that I'm doing or what I'm painting, but I can control what I choose to do when I finish that. You can also use the sand timer doing a work activity. This will allow your child to visually see how long they have to sit and work for before they get the reward. Obviously, if you're just completing one activity and then they're getting the reward, a timer probably isn't needed. But if there's a few things you want to do or there's a long activity, consider using a visual timer so your student can see how much longer they have to work for before they get their reward. For my next example, I want you to imagine that you've been deserted on an island. They all talk Moncontagin. Now I know you can't talk that language because I just made it up. Their language is a mixture of symbols and weird letter variations. You get out of the airport and someone comes up to you. They start saying, Montovia Yakutem. You have no idea what that means. But now you're being pulled through somewhere else. They're trying to take you somewhere. You're scared. You don't want to go with this person. You don't know them. You don't know what they're saying. And you certainly don't know where they're trying to take you. You start to panic. Are you a flight or a fight person? Are you going to run away screaming to try and get away and hide from whatever's happening? Or are you going to try and fight them off? Does this sound familiar to a situation you've ever encountered in your classroom or homeschool environment? Or even at home with your child? What I notice the most when I visit schools and families at home is the issues they're having with transition, where the most common things are people talking 100 miles an hour with 100 words a minute. The poor child has no idea what they're talking about. They cannot process that quickly. I always tell a teacher, slow down. Stop and take a breath before you speak. Start by saying their name to get their attention. It's no good saying, everyone come here, especially if you have an individual who's quite literal. Who's everyone? That's not my name. Does it mean me? And make sure you're only giving keyword instructions at the level of the child's ability. You do not need to say, okay, Johnny, if you can go to the toilet now, please, because we're going to be going swimming soon and we won't have time for you to go to the toilet once we get to the leisure centre. That's too much. All you need to say is, Johnny, need toilet? Or call him and show him a visual of a toilet. That's all he needs to know to understand what you're requiring of him. If you really want him to go to the toilet first, use the first and then visual. First toilet, then swimming. Another transition problem is when children go out on trips and they haven't been told where they're going. Think back to when you were in school. Did you have a favourite school trip? Mine was to this little fairy tale village and you got to go in all the different houses. There was a house for the three little pigs, for Goldilocks, you get the idea. I loved it. I was so young, but every house is still so clear in my memory. The next time we got on a bus, I was so excited to see if we were going to be going back there. Oh, I wonder if we're going to the fairy tale village. And especially if we start heading in that direction, I'm getting even more excited. Then we drive past it. We keep driving and we end up in a playground. This isn't where I wanted to go. This isn't what I had in my mind what we were doing today. That's it. I'm not getting off this bus or I'm going to run back to where I thought I was going. Can you see what the main issue in this situation is? The fact that the child didn't know where they were going. So they've started to think about where they think they're going. And when they don't go where they thought, it's like a crash to reality. It's really important to prepare our students whenever possible. When we go on trips, we watch videos or we look at photos on our interactive whiteboard of the place that we're going and things that we can do there. We might read a social story, like going to the beach. What do we need to wear? What do we need to take with us? What do we need to look out for? We can have a look on Google Maps to see what the place looks like. We can print out symbols to use on the timeline. Instead of just putting trip or bus on the timeline, put the actual place that you're going to, like beach or playground. All of this is going to help aid transition with your children because you're preparing them. You're letting them know in advance where they're going, which means they know what to expect. Transitioning between activities is another big one. And the way that we do it in my classroom is with PVC tablecloths. Yeah, you hear me right. Nothing fancy, just different tablecloths. For example, when we have breakfast and snack, we have this PVC tablecloth across the table that has all different types of fruit and vegetables on it. For our literacy activities, we have a tablecloth with letters of the alphabet and drawings on. For craft sessions, it's a tablecloth with paint splats on. We have a different tablecloth for every type of activity, and they're all linked, so children are able to link that tablecloth to the activity that's coming up. We use the same tablecloths year-round, and we just get new ones at the start of each year, or if they get ruined, but we try to keep the same style. The great thing about PVC tablecloths is how durable and long-lasting they are. The students can start to link these table mats to what activity is going to be taking place. So if they come in from the playground and they can see the craft table mat is out, they know in advance that they're going to be doing some sort of craft or messy play. Although it's on their timeline as well, it's just another added visual to use in the classroom and prepare them for what is coming next. We used to have a child who would get so anxious because they didn't know what activity we were going to be asking them to do. They would have a little bit of choice and then they would come over to the table for a work activity. They wouldn't know what the activity was until they were sat down and they were doing it. And this gave them severe anxiety because they just didn't know what to expect. By introducing the table mats, the child could see from across the room what sort of activity we were doing. They knew if it was going to be literacy, if it was going to be painting, if it was going to be cooking. So in their mind, they were already preparing themselves before they come to the table. Next is transitioning between classrooms. We are always based in one classroom and we complete all our activities here except for PE, swimming, trips and outdoor play. Throughout the year, we do take part in activities where we all rotate through different classrooms in the school and each classroom has a different activity and teacher leading the session. This is always a really tough day. In fact, we reduced it to a morning because it was just too much for the children. They find the morning so much better and they enjoy the experience. But it's still very hard transitioning to different classrooms. What class are we going to? What staff will be in there? Is it tidy? Are there things out that the children will want to get straight away? What are the distractions? Are there anything that could trigger the children? The best way here is to liaise with other staff in those classrooms. Help them prepare for your children to go into their class so it's a better transition for them. Have photos of the staff and classrooms that you'll be going to and show these as a slideshow or social story for your students to prepare them for the morning transitions between classrooms. Have a photo of your own classroom and keep this as what I like to call a lifesaver symbol. This is what I keep for last, and if I have tried everything and my students just cannot cope, I pull out this symbol. It shows them they can go back to our class, but I try to use it on a first and then board. So first you need to finish this work, or first this classroom, and then our classroom. It encourages them and helps them to see that we will be going back to our classroom. Finally, transitioning into a new class or school. Working with the young children, I get a lot of children transitioning to our school. Some may come from nurseries and some have never attended any sort of school or centre before. So transition booklets are a must. Inside our booklet, I have photos and symbol-supported sentences on every page. For example, the first page will be a picture of them and a symbol-supported sentence, just to say, "My name is Fred." It just makes the book more personal. Then the next page will be a picture of their new school, and underneath it will say, "This is my new school." Throughout the whole transition book, I include as much as possible in a child-friendly way so that they get prepared for pretty much everything when they start coming to our school. I include how they'll travel to and from school, what uniform they'll wear, what they can have for snack and lunch, what their classroom looks like, who their classmates are, who are the staff in the class, other staff they may see, where do we sit for work, where do we go for playtime, where do we eat our dinner, what about PE and swimming or music therapy. It's a great way to prepare the child coming to us for what they can expect to happen during their time at school and to help aid the transition. With a new child coming in, we also do transition periods. So we'll have a child come and visit us and fetch their parents or a member of staff from their school with them for an hour a day, a few times a week. Then we'll start to make these visits longer, 2 hours and 3 hours. Then we stay for the morning and they'll have breakfast and snack with us. Then we'll work up to staying for dinner too. Then we'll switch it and come in the afternoons a few times. Then we build up to staying for 3/4 of the day. And finally, a full day. We'll also start to transition out the person who comes along with them. They can stay in the school, but they can go to another class or go into the staff room. That way, they're still close by at the beginning of the transition period if we feel they're needed for any sort of comfort or support with the child. But they're out of sight of the child, which gives them the chance to explore and form new relationships. So what should you do if you have a child who struggles with transition? Stop and take a step back. Get out your trusty notebook, your phone or your tablet and now watch. And watch some more. Watch for a week. Look at the different reactions your student gives. See how they respond to transition. Is there a certain type of transition they find difficult? Is there a certain activity that they find hard to go to or hard to leave? Maybe it's because they're going from an activity that they really enjoy to one they really dislike. Consider sensory issues. Sound, who's working with them? I had a child a couple of years ago who used to love imaginative play. Do not believe all the autism myths, because I have children who squash at least one autism myth every year. He would have all these little people in a farm with the farm animals, and he would play for hours if he could. When it was time to finish and go to a work activity, we had World War III. No joke. He did not want to finish playing. He wanted to carry on playing out the story he had in his mind. His imagination was flowing, and there would be so many meltdowns. So we started to give him a choice. He could put his people into a basket, fetch it with us, and it was his reward at the end of his work activity. Or he could fetch one of his people over to watch him work. The rules were he was not allowed to touch or play with them while working, but they could be in his line of vision. If we felt he was distracted, we'd give him a few more chances before putting them under the table. His transitions became so much better, especially when the possibility of removing his toys was mentioned. I just couldn't take away his imaginative play, especially when he got so much out of those toys. So, a quick recap of some of the things to bear in mind when transitioning your students from one activity to another, and a few more of my favourite tips. 1. Ensure you are being clear how long they have left of their chosen activity. Do not just take it away from them. Provide visuals like a timer, count them down. Anything that will help them to understand how much longer they have left before they have to move. 2. Help them understand what they are going to do next. Prepare them for what's coming up, especially if it's something they do not like doing. The element of surprise or worrying what to expect is usually what causes a lot of problems in transition, because they just don't know where they're going or what to expect. 3. It's okay for them to transition using an object from their previous activity to this activity, so long as it's not distracting them. 4. Use visual cues, like the PVC tablecloths that we use, to let your students know what type of activity they're going to be doing. 5. Slow down. Don't rush your students from one activity to another. It's not a race. Trying to rush them will only cause more anxiety and is going to increase the risk of a meltdown. Slow it down to their level and support them. 6. If you're transitioning to a new activity, make sure the activity is set up. Do not transition them from choice to an art activity, then sit down and then get everything ready while they're sat waiting. Make sure everything's set up, ready, and then call them over to complete the activity. 7. Time and patience. It's going to take time. Transition is hard and you won't see miracles overnight. 9. If you're transitioning from a busy activity like outdoor play or PE, then try and calm it down before the next session starts. After playtime, we like to have a greeting on the interactive whiteboard. We'll have calm, relaxing songs and photos of the children on there. They check themselves in on the register, and it's very interactive for days of the week, how's the weather, and all those types of important life skill activities. This helps to calm the children down and bring them back down to a level where they're ready to transition to a work activity. There's nothing worse than getting the children in from playtime and then trying to sit them down and do work straight away. It's no good. They need to calm down first. 10. If your child isn't ready to use a visual symbol timeline yet, then use an object one. Use real life objects that they can link to activities on their timeline. Instead of using symbols, you are literally going to use real life objects, like a paintbrush to signify art, a plate for lunch, shapes for math activities. 11. Have a good daily routine and stick to it where possible. If children don't have routine, they're going to be a little bit all over the place. By having a set routine every week, it helps your children to learn what's coming next and to prepare them for each of the lessons on different days. Like knowing that swimming takes place every Friday morning, cookery takes place on a Wednesday morning. 12. Take a deeper look into your child's behaviours. See if there's a reason why they display behaviours during transition. Is it going to a certain activity? Maybe they dislike doing it. Is there a sensory issue? Does someone have really strong perfume on in that room? Is there a child who makes high-pitched noises? Does the room smell? No, that isn't a joke. I once had a student who hated going into a specific room because it smelled funny to him. We could never smell anything different, but he was adamant, and we were so lucky that he was verbal to tell us this because we would never have been able to guess. Or has your child had a bad experience during a specific activity or in that area or classroom? Have they had an accident there before? You literally have to turn yourself into a detective and think of all the different possibilities. 13. Are you interrupting something? Some of our children don't have only one diagnosis. They may have a few. And many of our children do have OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder, as an additional diagnosis. Please bear things like this in mind when you're trying to transition your students, because you may have a child who may not have even been diagnosed yet with OCD, but they may be displaying traits of it, and it's important to look for these. For example, if you're asking a child who is half coloured in their picture to move on to a different activity, they might really struggle to leave what they think is a half-finished activity. They can't think that they can come back to it later on. They need to finish it now before they move on to something else. Bear this in mind if you are giving your students really long activities to complete, especially if you know they're not going to have enough time to complete them. For them, they need to finish an activity completely before they can move on. So pay close attention to little details like this. 14. Break down activities into steps. If you want your child to finish eating their food, then go to the bathroom and then brush their teeth, make visuals for this to support the whole routine. I use adapted sequencing books for all of my life skills activities. You can find these on my Teachers Pay Teachers under Teaching Autism or my website teachingautism.co.uk. They break down the steps needed from my students in order to complete the activity. By making these steps smaller, the activity isn't as overwhelming for them. It's easier for them to transition to an activity where they know what they need to do in order to complete it, rather than be overwhelmed by all the steps. 15. Let your children have some form of control, like when we discussed the first and then board, and then providing your child with a choice board, rather than giving them a symbol and telling them what they'll be doing. Sure, they can't control everything, but give them control over what they can, like choice activities. Give them a choice board with different symbols or pictures and they can choose from there. By them choosing from the options you're given, this is directed choice. They're having choice, but it's controlled by you what they can actually choose. So there's an element of control still on both sides. 16. Rewards. When transition goes well, reward them. It doesn't have to be anything massive. Many of our children enjoy a high five or some bubbles. They can work towards a big treat at the end of the day. They could get a sticker. So long as it's a reward that they enjoy or are motivated by, or something that helps them to recognise how good they were at transitioning. So, I think that's a wrap for today's podcast. Thank you all for your kind comments on the first episode and for reaching out to me. I really appreciate it. If you have any questions about transition, if you're looking for advice on a particular student who's displaying certain behaviours during transition, or even if you want to share ways that you help your students and children with transition, please reach out to me. Either by leaving a comment on this podcast episode or my social media accounts, or email me at contact@teachingautism.co.uk. I love to hear from you all. We also have a private Facebook group, which is for education professionals, therapists, homeschoolers, parents, carers, family and friends, where we all chat and share advice and tips. You can join this over on Facebook under Teaching Autism and Special Ed Community. If you have 5 minutes, please consider reviewing my podcast on iTunes. I would really appreciate any feedback. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you again next week.